And so here I am at 12 years old doing documentation, technical documentation for a huge publisher in the US. None of this is paid, by the way, of course. This is all me just wanting to help and, you know, help my mom too, right? This is her job and it felt good to help her too. And eventually they asked my mom for my picture and they put it up in their lounge in the lobby because I made such a huge difference in the way they do work. I mean, it was digital transformation before anybody knew what digital transformation was. I was 12 and it made me feel good.
Welcome to Latinx in Power, a podcast hosted by Thaisa Fernandez.
When it comes to achieving success in the world of business, there's nothing more vital than supercharging your revenue. Sales professionals do more than just close deals. They timelessly chase leads, forecast growth, generate insightful reports, manage contacts, curate compelling content, and crush those ever-important numbers. The tasks on their plate seem never-ending. As we gear up for the fourth quarter, is the perfect time to explore a superior path to success. This journey starts with the all-new HubSpot Sales Hub. With the HubSpot Sales Hub, you unlock a seamlessly integrated platform where your data, tools, and teams seamlessly converge, forging a sophisticated and highly adaptable workspace that is an absolutely joy to work with. It is the place where you can effortlessly convert potential leads into active pipelines and bring deals to fruition, all from a unified hub. Plus, sequences and smooth workflows help reps streamline tasks and spend more time on what they do best, connecting with customers. With Sales Hub, closing deals is no big deal. Try it yourself at hubspot.com/sales. Welcome to Latinx in Power. Today, we are talking with Pablo Veramendi. Pablo is a director of audience evangelism at Microsoft. He is passionate about building meaningful communities and leveraging technology for innovative solutions. Pablo leads Microsoft Global Student Developer Programs, including Imagine Cup and Microsoft Learn Student Ambassadors. He enjoys inspiring others to believe in and achieve what is possible in the ever-evolving digital landscape. I'm so excited with this conversation. We have been talking about this a lot, and we met in person 3 months ago. I actually don't remember. Yeah, welcome.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here. I've been waiting for this, anticipating this as well.
Incredible. In this episode, Pablo will discuss his Hispanic identity, passion for building communities through technology, and involvement in the Imagine Cup and Microsoft Learn Student Ambassador Program. Pablo will share inspiring moments, insights on the future of technology, and tease upcoming projects at Microsoft.
Absolutely. Can't wait.
Awesome. And what does it mean to be Hispanic for you?
So first of all, a little bit of my background. On my father's side, my father is from Spain and he moved to the U.S. to marry my mom. My mom's from the Midwest, from the U.S., but she actually lived in Argentina for many years and in Spain. And so they kind of merged the cultures in our family. And it's for me, for my life, it's really been about family and about the importance of being with family and the importance of feeling that community around family and that love and care, right? I have a huge family in Spain. I think it's like 21 cousins in Spain. And so like, it's just massive. And anytime we went, when I was a kid, we used to go quite often every year, or every 2 years. And then as I grew older, that got a little more complicated, but you know, my heart and my soul has that Latin culture, right? That need, the desire to build family and build community around that. And it's always been a part of me. I married a woman from Ecuador. And so very much that South American, Ecuadorian culture is now part of me too. And it's very similar, obviously, to the Spanish culture. And so it adds, you know, a little more. When I traveled to Spain as a kid, it was very similar to what it's like to live in the US, just with a different language, right? You know, very similar access to food and to culture and all that. And, you know, traveling to South America really changed my perception of what life is like for most people around the globe, right? And, you know, while my wife and her family is very upper middle class or upper class, really, probably for Ecuador, as you travel through Ecuador, you see a lot more poverty. You see a lot more people that are struggling every day to make a living. And that had a really deep impact on me, I should say. And so something that I've carried through my life, wanting to make a difference, wanting to be able to lift up communities and caring about those communities. And it's been something that I strive to do both in my personal life with my own family. I have two kids and we, you know, very much imbue the Latin culture with them. You know, we always sit at the table together. We try to speak in Spanish at home as much as possible and, you know, show them the importance of family. So that's something that we hope that they take with them as well. And so, yeah, it's very much part of my cultural identity. Although I was born in the U.S. and obviously grew up in the U.S. culture, I've always kind of felt that I don't fully belong to the U.S. culture, but I also don't fully belong to Spanish culture. I also don't fully belong to Ecuadorian culture. So I feel like I'm kind of in the mix in all three, but don't really identify as any of them fully because I never lived in Spain. I never lived in Ecuador. And then living here, you know, I never felt like, you know, full 100% American, right? I'm dual citizenship as well. So yeah, it's interesting. It's a complex question, but I can touch on the surface of it and hopefully we'll get to dive in a little bit deeper with some of the other questions you have.
Yeah, incredible. I love your overview. I can definitely relate to that. And actually, I need to commission someone to make a drawing of that because I always see myself now as a bridge, yeah, as a bridge between like US and Brazil, because here I quite don't feel that I don't know, not exactly belong, but I feel like different. And then when I go to Brazil now, I feel different as well. And sometimes my friends joke, oh, you are gringa, you know? And I think like being this bridge is kind of like a beautiful way to see our situation, right? We
belong
to those places. And I like to see that I try to combine the things that I enjoy from the culture here and the things that I enjoy from my culture, the Latin America culture, that I can marry those two. And, you know, it's interesting. I love that you mentioned that.
Yeah. And one thing I would say that I also struggle with is that, you know, I have zero English accent, right? The only thing that really would identify me as Latino is my name. But a lot of people see my name and they see Pablo and they're like, oh, maybe he's Spanish, but they see Veramendi and they have no idea what Veramendi, they think maybe he's Italian, like they have no clue, right? And so sometimes I feel, you know, guilty that like people can't identify me by who I am. They don't know unless I tell them, right? That, you know, my heart is Latin or that's what we're bringing to our family. And so I struggle with that a lot because, again, no accent. If you saw me walking down the street, it's not like you'd say, oh, this guy is, you know, from Spain or whatever. And so, although the eyebrows sometimes give it away. But yeah, it's something I struggle with too, in terms of like, you know, how do I want people to perceive me? And yeah, it's interesting because I kind of, I can fully be in either world at any time, right? If I wanted to, I could pretend that I'm not Latino, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes I might do that and not even realize it. And in fact, when I was a kid, my brother and I grew up speaking Spanish and we lived in Dixon, Illinois, which is like the middle of nowhere, 2 hours west of Chicago. And we were the only Spanish speakers in the entire town. And so my brother and I grew up speaking Spanish, but then kids would make fun of us because we were the weird kids that spoke Spanish. And I had the strange name. My brother's name is Gregory. So it was a little more, well, I don't know about common, but a little more, you know, English based. And so my brother and I at some point said, okay, we're not speaking Spanish anymore. We don't want to be associated with Spanish because these kids are making fun of us, right? And so we ended up speaking only English at home. And my sister, when she was born, she was 8 years younger than me. We changed the dynamic of the household because we were only speaking in English, right? And so she actually grew up not in an immersive Spanish environment like my brother and I did. And it was because we kind of were ashamed or we were embarrassed that we were different, right? And that hurts. That bothers me, like when I think about it. But we're young, we didn't know any different and, you know, didn't really know how to deal with that dual identity, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, you touched in a lot of important things. And coming back to what you said, that people not being able to recognize that you are Hispanic, Latino. And it's very interesting because I will blame them. I will blame the other folks because I think a lot of people don't realize how diverse we are. And sometimes they have this idea of how like a Latino look like. And if you don't fit this imaginary mold that they have in their mind, that I also blame like the cinema, like the movies and like the media in general, because they portray us in a certain ways. Yep. And a lot of people don't realize how diverse we are. And I usually say that I recognize if a person is Brazilian because of first their accent, that is like my accent too. And right. Also body language. Like I can recognize if someone is like, I don't know, from Latin America because of the body language or yeah. I don't know, the way we speak. Because if you look at someone, you cannot say, because we are so diverse. And right. I feel a lot of people don't recognize that. For example, I have been living in US for quite a while. My partner, he's Japanese Brazilian. And he looks Japanese and people get very confused when they look at him. And I was like, oh, are you like, I don't understand. And I was like, dude, we are diverse. And
right.
We are super diverse. And I think a lot of people don't realize that. But I feel like now it's interesting moment because we are talking a lot about this. So hopefully people, they are understanding better how diverse we are right. And how amazing it is to speak two languages, you know, or in some cases, 3, 4. This yeah. is incredible.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, as a culture too, we're transforming. I mean, I just watched a Disney movie with my kids the other day on Disney Plus. And when I started it, it said, I can't remember exactly what the disclaimer is, but this movie was made in a time where things were different. I can't remember what the disclaimer is, but it's because the portrayal of, I mean, I think this case, it was Peter Pan, and they have a really terrible portrayal of, you know, Native Americans or Native, I think they're portrayal of Native Americans. And so they have these disclaimers now. And like, what I try to do with my kids is tell them why that's there. They may not even notice it. Like, I'm like, hey, let's pause on this for a second. And this is here for a reason. I'll explain when we get to that place, why they have it there. But like you said, you know, it's part on other people, right? But at the same time, it's our culture, not only in the US, but globally, and how those cultures have been portrayed and how that has a lasting effect. And yeah, we are starting to break that down, and podcasts like this and people like you that are having a large impact on that by getting people to talk about it and getting people to listen and hear about it, right? And telling their stories. And so I think it's super important.
Yeah, absolutely. And I started to touch about this, and I wanted to hear more. What inspired you, your passion for building meaningful communities and leveraging technology for innovative solutions?
So, I mean, the tech thing is just, I am a geek. Like, you know, I've always been somebody that likes technology and wants to understand how technology works. I think for me, it started with Legos, like just kind of being able to build things and take them apart and build new things and combine different things together. And my mom is an author, so she got a computer at a very young age. Well, I was at a very young age in the family. I think it was like 8 or 9. And that's like one of the first computers anybody that I knew had. And I'm aging myself here. But, you know, I wanted to understand how it worked. And I wanted to play games, really, is what I wanted to do, is play games. Nobody can see this, but I have floppy disks, actual honest to goodness floppy disks on my wall behind me, because that's one of the first games I played on a computer. And that really started my journey with tech. And part of it turned into this like new me as the one that could help them with technology. And that made me feel good, right? Like my neighbors, like they knew that I could help them with their computers. I actually ended up helping my mom. She's an author. And back then she would have to print her manuscripts and ship them via FedEx to her publisher. And she would always be rushing out the door at the last minute, trying to get to the UPS before they closed, doing her last minute edits. And then one day I asked her, I'm like, Mom, why don't you just send it to them via modem? And she's like, well, what's that? And I'm like, well, it's a device that connects computers, and we have one. And she's like a fax? I'm like, no, it's a modem. You can actually send the file. So they would open it as if you gave it to them on a floppy disk. And she's like, well, I have no idea how to do that. I'm like, well, I'm happy to help, like, you know, explain it to them if you want. She's like, okay, sure. And so it's Houghton Mifflin, which is a huge publisher here in the US. And she set up a call and she's like, okay, my son would like to help us transfer it via modem. And so she hands the phone over. And I think they didn't expect a 12-year-old boy to be on the other line. And so here I am at 12. And I'm like, you know, my first question was, are you running Windows, Microsoft Windows? Because I knew how Windows worked. I knew where things were and how to say, okay, so now double click on, I think it was accessories or whatever. Now double click on Hyper Terminal, put this command in. And now I'll call you, your modem will pick up. And so I go through this process, and within 20 minutes, we had sent this file, and this is me also instructing them, and they were completely blown away. I transformed the way they were going to do business without even realizing it. And they were so grateful. Like I ended up doing 3 more calls with 3 different authors, showing them how to do it. And then I'm like, you know, I should write these instructions down. And so here I am at 12 years old, doing documentation, technical documentation for a huge publisher in the US. None of this is paid, by the way, of course. This is all me just wanting to help. And, you know, help my mom too, right? This is her job. And it felt good to help her too. And eventually they asked my mom for my picture and they put it up in their lounge in the lobby because I made such a huge difference in the way they do work. I mean, it was digital transformation before anybody knew what digital transformation was. I was 12. And it made me feel good. Like, it made me feel good to help my mom. It made me feel good to help this company, to help these other authors, and to know that me showing them how to use technology, which to me was super easy, was changing the way that they worked. And obviously, when I was a kid, I didn't think of it in those specific terms, but it made me feel good. It made me feel satisfied and you know, realize I was able to accomplish something. And it was meaningful to me. Then I would add, I traveled, so I got to see different cultures, different countries, and starting to see, you know, what other people need across the globe, right? And that's always kind of been something that's been a part of me. My parents are very much that way too. They volunteer, they give back to the community. And so that's kind of been a view to me. I went to a Jesuit high school. And it was very much that it was an all male Jesuit high school. And our motto was men for others. So what can you do as a man for other people, right? We ended up going co-ed. So it was people for others, or I can't remember what it was after that when we went co-ed. But, and so that, you know, that giving kind of spirit was imbued in me from a very young age. And so I always just wanted to make a difference. And technology, I learned very quickly. And you know, I was kind of always on the cutting edge. And so I felt like that was a skill that I could use best to help other people. And then that's just kind of continued as I progressed in my career.
That's incredible. I love this story. I have a follow-up question. Did you tell the story when you were interviewing at Microsoft?
Absolutely.
Yes, that's incredible. And they were like,
In fact, at my interview, so we can get into this later or we can get into it now if you want, but I worked in a nonprofit for 6 years before coming to Microsoft. And it's a big jump going from a small nonprofit to one of the largest multinational technology companies in the world. And I spent a lot of time focusing on my resume and applying for this one specific job that I thought I would be most qualified for, and then preparing for the interview. And that story was part of the interview. And after that interview, I can tell a whole story if you'd like, but after the interview, I had two people come up to me and said that was the best interview they've ever seen from anybody that's applied for a job at Microsoft. So,
of course. Yeah. That's awesome. And another thing that I want to hear from you, and I'd love for you to share more, and I feel a lot of folks who are listening to us, they can take advantage of this program. So can you share more about the Imagine Cup and Microsoft Learn Student Ambassadors program and how people can be part of it?
Yeah, absolutely. So I came into Microsoft working in services. So I did support contracts for public sector. And I liked that because I felt like I was helping, you know, these nonprofits and universities and government agencies, empowering them to do more, right, with technology. And so I very much enjoyed that job. But, and this was only in the Midwest, essentially. My clients were only in the Midwest. I wanted to do something grander, greater, right? I was also volunteering for a nonprofit that helped inner city kids in Chicago learn how to refurbish computers. And then they would take those computers to their communities in Mexico. And so that was super meaningful for me too. And we actually created a little bit of a competition, kind of like the Iron Chef, where we'd have a bunch of computer parts and the students would have to put them together. And whoever built the best computer with the parts that were available in an hour win that competition. And I was the MC, right? And so this was something I volunteered on in Chicago. So I was looking for jobs at Microsoft that were be more meaningful for me, that would let me use all this kind of cultural awareness I've gleaned with the privilege of being able to travel across the globe throughout all these years. And I found this job that was managing this Imagine Cup competition. And I'm like, even though I worked at Microsoft, I wasn't super aware of it. I'd heard of it, but I didn't know what it was all about. And it's about empowering students across the globe to bring their ideas to a global stage and then hopefully bring them to market, right? And I read the job description, I got chills. I'm like, this is a job at Microsoft. This is like exactly what I want to do. Like, it's empowering students. It's using skill sets that I already have. It's global. It's at Microsoft. It meant that I had to move. So I was in Chicago at the time, but the job was here in Seattle or in Redmond on the headquarters. But yeah, I was, you know, again, for that, super prepared for that interview, used my network at Microsoft to, you know, help me get as many positive referrals to the hiring manager, but ended up getting the job. And the Imagine Cup is a global student developer competition for university students, and any university student, even grad students, are eligible. And it's about, you know, what ideas that you have that can bring a product to market, right? So, you know, are you interested in becoming a founder or a startup? And if you have an idea, but you don't know what to do with it, at Microsoft will give you the tools, will help you find your team. We will give you credits for our cloud services, even OpenAI, which is, you know, an organization that we partner with to help bring those ideas to life. And then we help you prepare to learn how to pitch to investors. We help you think through your business plan. It's really an incredible journey that students go through as part of the Imagine Cup. And every student that I talk to says, you know, don't even think twice, just register. Go to imaginecup.com and click on register and just look to see what's available to you, because there's so much that Microsoft has for students. We have, like I mentioned, Azure credits. So you don't have to use your own money to build something. You can get cloud credits. We have trainings. We have tons of trainings that you can do online for free to help you take that first step into artificial intelligence or into building a cloud application. And so it's really this amazing thing that I get to lead, right? That I get to help direct and kind of bring these students together from across the globe to compete. And when I say compete, it's a friendly competition. Like, what I love about it too is that these students are rooting for each other, right? Everyone wants each other to succeed. And even after the competition is over, yes, we pick a winner that's the world champion. We have the big show. If you go to imaginecup.com, you can see last year's world championship competition. But everybody who takes the step to bring an idea to a competition or a hackathon or anything like that is a winner in my mind, right? They are taking that chance, that opportunity to do something that they wouldn't have otherwise, right? And that's something that you can put on your resume. That's something that you can talk about as an experience, regardless of whether or not you even submit to the Imagine Cup. Like, just the fact that you went out there and took some trainings and tried to build a proof of concept, or you met other people and formed a team. And of course, if you progress, it's great too. But like, I just encourage all students, like, you may think that it's not possible, or that it's really hard, or that it's too competitive. And I'm here to tell you, we provide so much for you to help you in that journey. And there are so many other students out there that are where you are right now, thinking, is this something I should do? Like, we can connect with those students, right? And maybe you don't have an idea, but you're an amazing UX designer, or you are an amazing programmer. There are people with ideas that are looking for folks like you in this competition to be part of their team, right? And so I think it's just an incredible opportunity for students to come together and build something meaningful and bring it to market, right? I mean, the idea of the Imagine Cup is that it doesn't stop when you win the world championship. It doesn't stop if you don't make it to the world championship. We want each and every one of the teams that are building something, that are bringing something to life, to make it to market, to bring their amazing ideas to the world, because nobody understands the needs of their community or the world better than the university students that live there, right? Especially with all the changes our world is going through. You are all at this amazing moment where you can have a ton of impact. And this competition is one way you can do that.
That's incredible. We are going to link to the description of this episode so people can take advantage of that and learn more. And personally, I was at the Microsoft build and I was able to see like the winner, learn more about the projects. And to me personally, it was very inspiring. I imagine for folks that are that young and having this opportunity and having the support of Microsoft, this is a game changer. And we just talked about how sometimes for folks from Latin America, folks from developing countries, how things are hard in terms of access and even like getting inspired, right? Because sometimes you are the only person in your entire family or your entire like friends who are interested in technology. And sometimes you don't have someone to get inspired by, or you don't have the resources. So having the support of Microsoft, it's incredible. So very, very excited that you are sharing more about this incredible program.
Well, it's interesting because Satya, so our CEO, Satya Nadella, mentors the winning team every year. And so multiple times he said during the mentorship call, he's like, I was not doing what you were at that age, right? He is blown away by what these students are coming up with and what they're bringing to a global stage. And this is the CEO of one of the largest companies in the world, right? And so there's so much potential out there, untapped potential in students. And like you said, especially in countries where they don't necessarily have access to this kind of thing, like, this door is open for you, right? And so I just encourage you to walk through the door and see what's on the other side and take advantage of all of the opportunities that we have at Microsoft for you. And if you've already done a hackathon and you already had started an idea, you can bring that too, right? So it doesn't have to be something new that you have to develop just for this. It can be if you have a class project that you're working on or a thesis this or something or whatever. All that is are things you can bring to the Imagine Cup. And win $100,000. I mean, that's a lot of money.
Yeah, yeah. You forgot to mention this small detail, right?
So we also have access to Founders Hub, which is our Microsoft for Startups. It's another way that we give out support for founders and folks that are bringing startups to life. And this year, every team that advances in the Imagine Cup, last year was just the top 48. Now every team this year will have access to Founders Hub, which gives you like $2,500 in OpenAI credits, $1,000 of Azure credits, a mentorship, all kinds of stuff. And so that's just, you know, available to everyone, regardless of how far you go in the competition. And of course, the mentoring with Satya, the $100,000, it's just, and again, I think it's the journey. It's not just that end piece for that one team, but it's the journey that all the teams go through. I mean, they completely transform and their journey through the Imagine Cup. And it's just, yeah, it's been super inspiring to be a part of all these years.
Incredible. I want to share with you a podcast that I have been enjoying. It's called Inclusion and Marketing, and it's hosted by Sonia Thompson, and it's brought to you by the HubSpot Podcast Network, the audio destination for business professionals. Inclusion and Marketing digs into important topics like belonging, customer experience, and diversity, and how you can practice inclusive marketing authenticity. Because when you lead with inclusivity, you win the attention, adoration, loyalty, and trust of a broader group of consumers. And I really enjoyed the episode about lessons in belonging from Beyoncé's Renaissance World Tour. And I love how Sonia discussed the profound link between life, business, and customer loyalty, as I found invaluable lessons on belonging from her experience attending the Beyoncé's tour. And I love to invite you to take a listen to Inclusion and Marketing whenever you get your podcast. I wanted to ask you, after leading these programs for so many years, I wanted to hear from you, what are the most inspiring, insightful things that you have seen?
I mean, I think that what's the most inspiring in general is just the desire that these students have to empower their communities, right? And to make a difference in the world. And so last year's winners, for example, Team Tawi from Kenya, they created an app, which, you know, in and of itself doesn't seem like that impactful, but like when that you plug it into all the different things that they are trying to solve for, it's amazing. And so what it does is it essentially uses any cell phone, any Android, and they're creating an iOS app too, it, like down to Android version 5 or something, that you can just use your phone to not only get a live text to speech or speech to text of what somebody's saying, but it can also focus in individual and amplify their voice. And the reason they created it was because one of the team members' brothers suffers from APD, which is essentially an auditory processing disorder, which makes it harder for them to process what they're hearing. And so like in a classroom, for example, that where there's other students making noises or there's other ambient noises and trying to focus on the teacher is very difficult for them. And so they created this app that would essentially amplify only the teacher, and not only amplify, but also show you the text on your phone at the same time to help them focus and concentrate and understand what's happening. And it seems like a simple thing, but it's using a lot of AI. It's doing it in real time. And it's just incredible. And it's also using a commodity device, right? So it's not like hearing aids cost, you know, anywhere from $3,000 to probably $10,000. And for kids in Kenya, that's not something that they can afford, right? So they are missing out on education. They are missing out on being able to participate in conversations because of this audio processing disorder. And this app helps solve that for them. And it's just really incredible to think about, like, you know, the difference they want to make is this is something, a need that they've seen. And I think that they said it affects like 5 million students in, I should say, 5 million youth in Kenya, whether or not they're students. And so, I mean, that can have just have a huge impact. That they were just focused on Kenya. And during the Imagine Cup, we can open this up to the world. And there's just a much higher need for that, right? And so that's incredible. There was a student team back in the day that created a bionic arm that essentially uses commodity devices and Arduino device inside the hand. It's a 3D printed prosthetic hand and has a camera on it. And so all it does is it takes a picture of the object as you approach it and then decides on what kind of grip the fingers should use to pick up that thing. And also like it seems like a simple idea, but I mean, they built it for like, I think $250 of commodity components, right? An arm that connects to, you know, somebody that can do that kind of thing is usually like tens of thousands of dollars, right? And so this just makes it so much more accessible and also for people that wouldn't otherwise be able to afford it, right? And it can change, it will, it does, it changes their lives. And what's inspiring about them is that not only did they win the Imagine Cup, and they had a demo failure actually at the World Championship, but they still won, which is awesome. If you want an example of how to keep on rolling after a demo failure, go check out the 2018 Imagine Cup World Championship. They went through it and they still won, and they're bringing it to market. They've gotten funded. And I think they're just in the process of bringing their first device out to market this year. And so it's just incredible to see and to think about like all the different use cases that, like, you know, that you and I may not think of because we're not, it doesn't impact us, right? But it impacts so many people across the globe. And that's what's so incredible is that the students, that's what they're thinking of, right? Is how can I make a difference? How can I empower others? And it's super inspiring.
That's incredible. Do you want to talk more about the Ambassadors Program?
Yeah, I'd love to. So yeah, so I've been doing the Imagine Cup for 8 years now. And about 4 years ago, our student ambassador program, they were looking for a new leader. And so I'm like, I want to do it, right? It's students. I love students. I love empowering them to do more. And so I took that over and I've been leading that. My team has been leading that for the past 4 years. So the student ambassador community is all about students that are passionate about tech and want to share that passion with others. You apply to be in the program. Once you join, we give you a ton of benefits to be able to share that. So we give you a bunch of learning that you can do online, virtually. We have other ambassadors that are constantly doing workshops that you can join and learn more. You can partner with them on projects. There's a lot of ambassadors that bring their projects to the Imagine Cup. It's over 3,000 students in 104 countries across the globe. And it's just this amazing to be part of this vibrant, diverse community of folks that are passionate about technology and passionate about, you know, skilling themselves up, skilling their communities up, and really having an impact. And what I love about it is, like I said, 104 different countries, you can pretty much go anywhere, you can find an ambassador, right? And they're working on their campuses to essentially show other people what they can do with Microsoft products and technologies, right? And showing them how they can use that their knowledge of that tech to make themselves more employable or to be an entrepreneur and to bring their ideas to market. And so it's really amazing to be part of this community. And all the ambassadors are so grateful to have the space, right? To have the space not only that they feel like they belong in, like you mentioned before, there may be students out there that they're the only ones that are really interested in tech and they don't really know, have anybody else to talk to about it. Well, this is the place you can do that, right? And meet other people. And, you know, we've been very intentional about making sure that women feel welcome and are part of the program. I think we have over 40% of the program is women today, and that's amazing, right? And that's something that we need to keep on working on, that we need to keep on showing everybody, not just women, but any gender minority or any diverse, person in the planet that is able to participate in something like this and should participate in it, because we're a very welcoming community and just, you know, love to have more people come in and share their passions.
Incredible. How do you see the future of technology evolving, and what impact do you think it will have on society?
Well, it's interesting. If you asked me that 6 months ago, I would have a completely different answer. But now with AI, like, it's progressing so quickly. You know, for me, for both Imagine Cup and ambassadors, it's so important to, you know, instruct and show students the value of being responsible with AI, right? Because it is already completely changing everything. I'm excited about it. I worry about it too. You know, I had a call with a bunch of students and I asked them how they want to use AI anonymously. And somebody put to cheat. And, you know, I'm like, and this was in the program, right? And I'm like, really? A, why would you put that in there? But B, like, don't use AI for that. Like, you need to use it to supplement you and kind of help you do things, not to cheat your way into things, right? And so I think that that's going to be a really hard thing to show, because it is easy to take advantage of AI to do things that, you know, you can pretend are yours, right? But they aren't. And I'll say, like, you know, we've seen the applications to the ambassadors change drastically from when before ChatGPT and today. They're much more verbose. The English is way better. And that is not a coincidence, right? And we know that ambassadors are using it. And you know what? It's okay, because we require that the applications be in English. So if you want to use it to grammar check and to make sure that, like, you know, the English, the wording is proper and good, awesome, right? But they need to be your ideas, right? They need to be your thoughts. And if you start down that path of just trying to, like, skip the line or cheat the system using AI, at some point it's going to catch up to you. I feel like my job and our job at Microsoft is to make sure that this next generation is using it responsibly and is using it in ways that will help supplement. You know, we call it the co-pilot, right? The be your co-pilot, that it's something that helps get you to your destination, but is not the one that's driving, right? It's not the one that's taking you there, because you need to learn. Like all these stories that I was telling you, the stuff that I told you when I was a kid, all that was from lived experience, right? From things that I did to learn about it. If I had just asked an AI how to better send a file and like, you know, I didn't learn anything, right? I would be like, okay, great. Here's your answer, right? But really the future is knowing how to use AI for good, really, to be better at what you're doing, right? To be better communicate or to help throw ideas back and forth, right? To ideate, but not to be the one that's doing the work for you, right? And I think that we're at this precipice right now where it's evolving so quickly that we really need to students across the globe and everybody really to be aware of the way they should be using it, not the easiest way to use it to get ahead, right? And so that's my concern. But I also think there's just a lot of positives too, because there's so much that it can help. Like I mentioned before, like, you know, if English is not your first language and you're applying for a job or applying for something, use it to help, you know, check that. We have students that do blogs, ambassadors that do blogs in English, and we would help grammar check them and send them back and forth. And I'm like, hey, just run it through Bing Chat and just make sure that you've kind of done that pass first. And then it just makes the process that much easier, right? It takes that step away, that back and forth so many times because they've already had the grammar check being done and kind of the phrasing and all that. And so I think there's a lot of positives, but then again, we're kind of go back to accessibility, right? How many people can access this? Is there going to be a greater divide between those that can and those that can't? And how do we make sure that we account for that and we don't leave anybody behind? And I really feel like that's the job of communities. That's the job of, you know, these communities to help these folks understand that they can access it. And you know, one thing that's fascinating to me is, you know, you don't need a really powerful laptop or desktop to code anymore. You can do it all in the cloud. And so you don't even need, I mean, some people, Thaisa, you'd be shocked, they do it with their phones.
I was going to ask you, because like when we think about developing countries, we see this movement where people don't have like laptops anymore. They don't have personal computers. And sometimes they have like a phone for the entire family. The entire family share the phone, and it's, of course, it's not an iPhone. Yeah. It is a phone that sometimes the screen is broken, you know, it's not like the latest model, you know, and that's incredible to hear that people are like using their phones.
All they need is a connection to the internet, and they can do it through VS Code online. They can do it through a virtual machine and have that machine be in the cloud. And by the way, the credits that you get for free from Microsoft through Azure for Students or through GitHub Student Pack, all of that can be used to do that. And I encourage you all to experiment with it. If you're like, oh, I can never be a coder or never do anything like this because I don't have a computer, that is just not the case anymore, right? I mean, there's just so much you can do. It's not easy. Don't get me wrong. A phone screen, like you said, small, cracked, shared by the family. Those are challenges, but I encourage you to see if you can work through those challenges and try and see what you can do, because there's so much you can accomplish on a phone that before required a $3,000, $5,000 development desktop. You can now do it on a screen, any screen, right? And so I think that's huge. And also AI is also accessible via those screens too, right? And so that's changing, but still, like, I think that those that have and those that don't, that gap is going to widen with the use of AI. And that worries me. And it's something that, you know, I think that all of us need to be a part of and making sure that we're doing everything we can to include everybody in this journey.
That's incredible. You touch a lot of very important things. So thank you for that. And also it's interesting when you share about like the access and AI, and especially for folks who have like English as the second language, and how sometimes it can be a barrier for them to apply for a program that is only in English, right? And we might feel, oh, my English skills are not good enough. Sometimes I'm not able to express what I want to share in my second language. So having access to ChatGPT, for example, is something that can help you to proofread. So you feel better about like submitting your proposal, right? And it's incredible. And also a fine balance between using a tool like that, but also making sure you are actually learning with this tool. And perhaps you're like, when you proofread, you're like, oh, actually, I was using the wrong like past tense or whatever, the way we were like communicating. And I feel like for me personally, I studied English my entire life. But when I moved to the US, it was very, very hard. And especially in a work environment, right? And a lot of like tech companies, we rely a lot of like written communication. So I always felt like my writing skills in English wasn't good enough. And the way that I decided to do that was start to write blog posts about like technology, product management, program management. And I remember in the beginning feeling very insecure and knowing that I was writing a lot of things wrong. But now I had this process where I have been writing since 2016. And now like I feel very comfortable writing in English. And I had this process where I was like, I don't know, not so great, but like improving. And now folks can use like ChatGPT to proofread, which is amazing. But at the same time, find balance between not relying so much in a tool, but actually learn with the tool and so we can improve your skills. So I think this will be the challenge for folks now.
Yeah, and I think that you need to be your authentic self, right? And you know, you can, your authentic self can come through with some help of AI in translation or in what have you, but you still needs to be you, right? It still needs to be your words and your thoughts and your ideas. And that's what's so important. And especially when you're interviewing for a job, like when I interview candidates at Microsoft, I'm looking for people who are they're bringing their full selves, their authentic selves, and using their computer as a tool, using AI as a tool to help them be their authentic selves, right? And not trying to be somebody they're not, or try to, you know, use those tools to take advantage of the system, right? And so I think it's super important to use those as well. I mean, it's kind of where the calculator was at some point, right? When the calculator first came out, you know, ones you could buy and bring to school, like they were banned from schools, banned from math classes. Like, yeah, this is going to, like, nobody's going to learn anything. And everybody uses a computer calculator today, right? I mean, Excel is the most advanced calculator in the world, right? And I use that every day. And I would never have been able to do the type of stuff I do today without that tool. And that's what AI is becoming already and will be in the future. It will be that tool, but you have to learn how to use it to augment who you are as an authentic human being and really, you know, bring your full self to what you do.
I love that. I love that. I'm enjoying this conversation so much. I could talk with you for hours and hours. And I wanted to thank you for your time. And I wanted to ask you, which resource helped you in your journey? That is there anything you want to highlight and share with us?
I mean, curiosity. I think the resource in my, it was just being endlessly curious, right? And asking questions and finding people that can help me answer those questions. And I did not have access to the internet because it didn't exist when I was a student, right? Before I was a teenager. And so I had to go talk to people. I had to go ask questions. I had to go talk to my professor or my teacher. And I really do think it comes back down to kind of Legos and really wanting to understand how things work and asking questions and thinking, you know, I know how to do this. I know how to put things together, but I can make this even better if I understand how to use this piece or that piece, and going to ask people about those pieces and add that to your knowledge. And now there's so much out there that you can find for free resources to learn coding, to learn how to use Azure, how to use the cloud. I just encourage you all to figure out what you are curious about and pursue that curiosity tenaciously, right? Because that will help you be your authentic self, right? And that'll help you learn and grow and give back to society, right? And so for me, it's curiosity. And you know, there's so much to be curious about, and there's so much out there to learn nowadays that I just encourage you all to take advantage of the resources that are out there. I do have to pitch both. So Imagine Cup is at imaginecup.com. So if you're interested to find out more, please go to www.imaginecup.com. And Student Ambassadors is studentambassadors.com. So just take that first step. Like, you know, I don't know if I could be an ambassador. Just go look at the application and see what the questions we ask, because it's much easier than you would think. And we're just looking for people that are passionate about technology. And there are a lot of people out there, right? And again, if you feel like you're kind of in a place where you're the only one that you're passionate about it, there is a world of students out there that are passionate about tech that would want to share that with you. So I would love to see any of you join either the Imagine Cup or Ambassadors.
Incredible. Love that. Thank you so much for your time. I want to leave the last minutes for you to share anything you want to share, and also where people can find you. And we are going to link to the description of this episode, everything you're sharing.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you. I just, you know, again, I encourage you all to just follow your curiosity, figure out what it is you're passionate about. You're not going to figure it out right away. I didn't imagine this job as like my dream job when I was a kid or even when I started at work, right? And it took a lot of time to get to where I am and a lot of effort. And I was in a bunch of different industries. I worked at a university, I worked at a nonprofit, but all of that informed me, right? All that helped me figure out what is it that makes me my authentic self and what is that thing I want to reach. If we had more time, I'd talk about ikigai, which is this Japanese word for essentially blending your passion with your work. And like, there's a whole system around that I didn't realize I was kind of innately doing as I kind of went through my career. But, you know, I think it's important to think about that. Like, what are the things you're passionate about? What are the things that are meaningful for you? Where can you have impact? And, you know, what can actually pay you, right? Because ultimately, you got to get paid, right? And so the fact that I was able to find all those four things in this role I have at Microsoft is incredible, right? But it's not something that happens overnight. It's not something that you can just snap your fingers and you get to. It's not like you're going to go out there and find your dream job. If you have an idea that you want to bring to market, it's going to take work to do that, right? But there are resources out there to help you. And Microsoft has so many resources for student entrepreneurs, for folks that want to bring their ideas or want to grow, that, you know, just encourage you to come check it out. And then to find me, I'm on X. I guess I can't call it Twitter anymore. I'm on X at I am Pablo. You can look me up on LinkedIn. It's I think it's just P. Veramendi, but you can just look up Pablo Veramendi and you'll find me. And yeah, I would love to connect. Very passionate about the space, and I'm open. My DMs are open on Twitter, X. Sorry, Elon.
Oh my God, just say Twitter. Every time you say X, I'm like, what was that?
Yes, Twitter. All right.
Twitter.
coming from a former Twitter employee, LinkedIn, my DMs are open as well. And, you know, I'm open to talk with you, right? I want to empower others. That is, before Microsoft had that as our vision, our mission and vision is to empower every person and every organization on this planet to achieve more. That was my mission. I didn't know it, but that was my mission, right? And as that 12-year-old, right, working, helping this publisher, as a guy in the neighborhood that was helping other students, as I worked in nonprofits, like, that has been my mission all along. And it just, I feel very privileged to be at a company that helps me live out that mission in the work that I do.
That's incredible. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Thaisa.
That's it for today, everyone. Thank you so much for your time. I would love to hear your thoughts about the podcast and the episodes. Please message us with any insight, any feedback you might have, and also guest suggestions. Message us in your favorite social media platform. We are in all social platforms. And if you want to write us in a review, we will love that. Feel free to write us in a review on Apple Podcasts, Audible, Amazon, or any other streaming that you like. Thank you.